Support for Voices in the Family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks so much for listening to Voices in the Family. Every day, we listen to others pretty much all day, but do we really take in not only what they're saying, but what they mean? More than ever, it seems technology has made it easier for us to tune others out. The more we communicate, it seems, the less we hear. On today's show, we're going to be talking about the art of listening. Is there really a way to communicate that makes it easier for people to listen to us? Can we be taught listening skills in this fast-moving world? And what makes it all so important anyway? My guest today is Michael Nichols. He's the professor of psychology at William and Mary in Virginia. He's the author of The Lost Art of Listening, How Listening Can Improve Relationships. Later in the show, we're going to hear interviews with the founder of StoryCorps and a physician at Columbia University who created the school's narrative medicine program. And of course, we want to hear from you. It's an open show about listening. So our number is 888-477-9499. Do you feel you are truly heard by anyone? Do you feel you're a good listener? Well, maybe, maybe not. Give us a call. 888-477-9499. Mike Nichols, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dan.
Well, one of the things that I preach about often in my lectures is that the hunger to be known may exceed the hunger to be loved, even. So we have a fundamental drive to be understood for who we are. So if you accept that, and it sounds like you do through your writings, why? What makes it so fundamentally important?
Well, it's hard to explain how important being listened to, but being listened to means being taken seriously, being accepted for who you are, what you think, and what you feel. Often people don't listen well to us because they confuse accepting us for who we are versus agreeing with us or going along with us. And so instead of getting listened to, we usually get interrupted or argued with.
Hmm. So you're also kind of touching on one of the issues about listening, that there really are two kinds. It's, one is hearing and the other is really listening, which includes empathy and really hearing the person and not just the story. Both are important, but what's the difference to both speaker and listener?
Well, most of us think we're better listeners than we are, because most of the time we listen, quote-unquote, with the intention to respond rather than to understand. In other words, we're just waiting our turn. People think that listening is easy, that it comes naturally, that it's automatic. Nothing could be farther from the truth. Genuine listening is hard. It takes an effort. And we're not always willing to work at it. And frankly, you don't have to work at it all the time. Some interchanges aren't worth making a terrible effort to concentrate on the other person. But important interchanges are worth making the effort, though we don't always do that.
Yeah, we're going to talk about a little later in the show about why we don't do it, what interferes, and what we can do to repair it. But first, I'd like you, Michael, and our listeners to hear something. It's an interview with David Isay. He's the founder of StoryCorps, an independent nonprofit project whose mission is to honor and celebrate one another's lives by recording the stories of our lives with the people we care about. He's also the founder of the National Day of Listening. Great title. Producer Gita Simons asked him how he became interested in listening.
I guess I've always been more interested in listening than in talking, but I think that we all have that in us. You know, I was a radio documentary producer for many years before starting StoryCorps, and at first the radio pieces that I did were, you know, kind of typical sort of reporter pieces. As time went on, I was so much less interested in hearing what I had to say and so much more interested in hearing what the people who I was interviewing had to say. Eventually, I kind of disappeared from those stories. And to me, that was that for the medium of radio, it was just a powerful way to tell a story because it really puts you in a often in a place where you've never been before. And those were the kind of stories that, that I was doing at the time, kind of hard-to-access places. And StoryCorps kind of grew out of that work. And it's really, it's about people connecting and taking the time to listen to the people around you and recognizing that listening to someone, carefully listening to someone, tells them that you care about them and how much it can mean to people to really be closely listened to.
So with StoryCorps, you're essentially telling other people how to do what you do. Were you essentially telling people how to listen like you?
It's not rocket science. You know, you just keep your mouth shut. It's about listening. It's about being genuinely curious about what people are saying and giving people a chance to talk. But I have no special listening abilities. I mean, we all have it. It's just kind of recognizing how powerful it can be and what a great experience it can be to kind of slow down and turn off your cell phones, turn off your computer, turn off your iPhone, and just stop and look someone in the eye and tell them how much they mean to you by listening to them.
I read in an interview with you that you were saying that the people who were doing these interviews, this was creating a bond that lasted much longer than after the mic was turned off.
The way that StoryCorps is structured, and it's two people who usually know one another, are close, often family members, coming in to have a conversation, and many people think of it as a chance to kind of leave a legacy or transmit wisdom from one generation to the next. And you know, when you have these sorts of conversations, the structure of StoryCorps suggests that you ask kind of big life questions that don't normally get asked. Questions like, you know, what are the most important lessons you've learned in life? How do you want to be remembered? And this is not normally talked about around the dinner table. Even, you know, who are your grandparents or what was the happiest moment of your life? So you're going to learn things when you have these conversations, no matter how well you think you know the person you're talking to, that you didn't know before. And once you kind of start having these conversations, they do continue past the 40-minute structure of a StoryCorps interview. It kind of opens up this new dimension of what can be talked about.
And tell me about the National Day of Listening.
Sure. We launched the National Day of Listening 2 years ago. This past November was the second annual National Day of Listening. And we asked the whole country on the day after Thanksgiving. It's kind of an antidote to Black Friday to take an hour out to interview a loved one, to listen to a loved one, and record it by any means necessary, whatever equipment you have, your computer, your iPhone, whatever it is that you have around to record, and listen to them for an hour and ask those big life questions. And we think of it as kind of the most meaningful but least expensive gift we can give one another. And we've seen, you know, this means a lot to people. Listening to someone else reminds them that they matter. And saving this, the record of that conversation in some way, lets them know that they're also not going to be forgotten.
That was David Isay. He's the founder of StoryCorps. And you can find out more about StoryCorps and the National Day of Listening at StoryCorps.org or through the link at our website for today's show. We're talking with Dr. Michael Nichols. He's written The Lost Art of Listening, How to Listen, How Learning to Listen Can Improve Relationships. Hey, if you think you're a good listener, give us a call. Or if someone has told you you're not such a good listener, give us a call. 888-477-9499. Also, if you've got stories about what it's felt like when you have been heard or haven't been heard, we'd love to hear from you. 888-477-9499. Michael, one of the things we heard from David Isay is this isn't rocket science. It's just keeping your mouth shut. Is it just that easy?
No and yes. When people seek a laundry list of how-tos about listening, often they're making more of an effort to show that they're listening than to actually listening. And really, the essence of listening is about having the intention, as you said earlier, to understand what the other person is trying to communicate. So it's largely about paying attention and being interested. And you don't need a lot of techniques to do that.
Yeah, he did use the word, in all fairness, curiosity.
Yeah, that's a lovely word, because if you're curious about the other person's experience, it makes it easier to show interest because you have that interest.
Let's talk about the other side of it. What's the effect of not listening, of not being heard?
When people are not listened to, they feel devalued, misunderstood, not cared about. And it's a feeling that most of us are so familiar with that we don't always recognize it. You know, we go through the day and we feel a little empty and lonely, and we think, well, maybe we need this or we need that. Often what we need is a little more sympathetic understanding from other people.
Yeah, and empathetic. To me, when I haven't been heard, I was in a pretty severe car accident and years ago, and I felt alienated from my species, and no one was able to hear my voice. Everyone was giving me a pep talk because I was injured so badly and the future looked pretty bleak to me. And everyone was giving me a pep talk. And when I tried to talk about what my deepest fears were and my suffering, they told me not to look at it that way. And the effect of that was that I felt fundamentally alienated. I felt different from the rest of the humans on this planet, and that was my greatest pain.
It's very hard to listen to another person who's suffering, especially if you care about that person, because you, to some extent, by listening, share that suffering.
Yes.
And so people with the best of intentions, they think they're caring, they tell us not to feel that way because it's too painful for them.
Right. Well, empathy is, or compassion is literally to feel into someone else's experience.
Yes, and people think that they can achieve empathy automatically, and it doesn't happen automatically. Empathy takes two processes. The first process may be automatic, and that's feeling along with the other person, but the second part of it requires thinking. You have to feel and then think, and it takes work.
What do you mean, feel and then think?
Well, empathy, the first part of empathy is just a receptive openness. The other person says something, and you kind of feel along with them, and you share in an emotional state with them. But in order to really empathize and really get what their experience is, you have to actively try to understand. You have to think about the other person.
Mm.
You can't just rely on your automatic feelings.
Well, speaking of empathy, you know, we're of course social animals, and we require relationships to survive. And just as you said, for the relationships to survive, for us to feel part of community, we need empathy. So tell me why some people seem to have it and some don't, and are there gender differences?
Well,
that's a provocative question, by the way, if it wasn't obviously so.
Why do some people seem more empathic than others? I think they've got more going for them. The irony is that no one is a very good listener unless they get listened to in their own lives. And so if you try to be selfless and just there for other people, you're not likely to be a very good listener. In order to be a good listener, you need to be able to talk to people and get things off your own chest. As for gender differences, isn't it interesting how people like to believe that we're separated by a vast gender gap? I'm not sure why that idea is so popular. People seem comforted by the idea that men and women are completely different. There may be differences, but I think it's a shame to exaggerate them and glorify them and stereotype them. I find men and women, in terms of listening and understanding and relationships, far more similar than different.
Huh. So is it fair to say that everyone is on a continuum from being good at empathy, at listening, at hearing?
Yeah, I think that's fair. But it's not just a character trait. It also depends on what's going on in your own life. If you are suffering or unhappy or you're not getting any understanding, you're not going to be a very good listener.
We've got some callers who want to join the conversation. Let's go to Charles. Charles,
hello.
Hi, Charles.
Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
Well, my question is simply on this whole issue of listening. I'm certainly in a profession where I do a lot of listening and talking, but also debating. And I think there is this perhaps subconscious or conscious decision by people that the other person is listening to me if they agree with me. And I don't think that is a safe assumption. That is to say, the argument may continue because the person, one person may say, look, you're not hearing me, you're not hearing me. And really, I have found that perhaps the other person is hearing, they just don't agree. You know what I'm saying? I really find that people feel like the other, or not everyone, certainly, but I, certainly in my experience, there are a lot of people who feel that the other person hears me. The proof that the other person is here, has heard me, is when they agree with me.
Well, there's two different things, and Michael addressed this with the issue of hearing and listening. The uh-huh. phrase, you're not hearing me, can be, you're not hearing this argument that I'm waging, mm-hmm. uh-huh. or the other one can be, you're not hearing me as a person, and what uh-huh. what this means to me. And there really are two different things.
Uh-huh. Well, and I'd also like to add that Charles is absolutely right. You don't have to agree with someone to hear them. However, people don't know we've heard them unless we let them know. And if you uh-huh. hear what the other person says and acknowledge it, let them know that you mm-hmm. heard them, then they'll feel understood, and then you can be free to disagree. But if you just start with the statement of disagreement, then mm-hmm. they don't know if you understood where they're coming from or not.
Okay.
Yeah, that one moment's hesitation after you're done talking and the listener's done listening, that one moment of silence after you're done is so helpful for both speaker and listener, because that means that in that 1 second, that means the listener's taking it in, going to pause for a second, take a breath, and then respond. Rather than just, it's a very respectful second.
Indeed.
So thanks so much for your call, Charles.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. Michael, we're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about empathy. Can it be taught? And can we stop the noise in our head in order to listen? Because it's hard to listen when we have racing thoughts. Excuse me. Our phone number is 888-477-9499. Do you feel you're not being heard? If so, give us a call. 888-477-9499. My guest is Dr. Michael Nichols. He's a professor of psychology at the College of William and Mary, and he's written The Lost Art of Listening, How Learning to Listen Can Improve Relationships. I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY-FM.
Support for WHYY is provided by Abington Memorial Hospital, now offering more services through Abington Health. Included in the new Abington Health brand are Abington Memorial Hospital, Lansdale Hospital, outpatient centers in Montgomery and Bucks counties, and access to more than 1,300 primary care and specialty physicians. Abington Health. More care. More locations. More for you. Full details are available on the web at abingtonhealth.org. Abington Health. The power to heal.
After making a splash with her debut single, Pronails, rapper Kid Sister has released her new album, and it's changing what we think of as hip-hop.
I don't care what genre it is, and yes, I love house and I love hip-hop. I love everything. I think good songs come in all shapes and sizes.
That's Kid Sister. She performs songs from her new genre-defying record, Ultraviolet, this week on Sound Opinions.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host, with Dr. Michael Nichols, professor of psychology at the College of William and Mary, and he's the author of The Lost Art of Listening, How Learning to Listen Can Improve Relationships. We talked about the impact of listening. We've got a caller who can address that question, the impact actually of being heard. We've got Juliet on the line. Juliet, hi, you're on the air. Hello? No, I guess we don't have her. Michael, you make an important observation when it comes to listening to our children. You say parents need to listen to their children through the child's excitement, that they should be tuned into a child's emotional responses rather than their own anxieties. That would be a perfect parent.
Right.
Easier
like,
said
like
than
you and me, right?
Right. It sounds simple. So how do we do it?
Well, parents are terrible listeners because it's very hard to listen when you are busy trying to change or control the other person. Because they say something and you don't want it to be that way, so you tell them it's different or you distract them or make a suggestion. One of the arts of being a good parent is learning to let go. And even when kids are little, parents need to let go
of
controlling their emotional responses. Little kids are entitled to their feelings and their wishes, and you can accept them and acknowledge them. Let them have them.
They can have their emotions, but they can't kick their little sister.
Sure, that's not a difficult distinction.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about listening to little children. I've got a new best friend in my life, and he's 17 months old, and he doesn't have speech yet. And boy, do I listen to him. You know, it's
sure.
I'm
you know,
very to his little movements, his facial expressions. He's communicating that way, and I'm starting to get tuned into him. But I'm sure that'll dissipate as he talks, and you know, I won't be as good when he gets
older. Yeah, but you're absolutely right. I mean, that's the time to start. Many parents don't tune into their baby's rhythms. They, you know, when the baby is quiet, they jiggle and poke them, and they amp up their own response. Or if the child is excited and the parent isn't, then they respond in a lackadaisical way. And that's the beginning of a long story of not listening to children.
Well, what you're asking for is extraordinarily difficult, and that is you're asking parents to understand their own anxiety and not act on it. And I think both of those things are extraordinarily difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But maybe it's worth making an effort, especially when we interact with our children.
Of course, children are the other half of relationships. And, you know, we can see them play their part as early as a year old. I've read some research that children develop empathy as young as a year old. So it's in there for everybody.
Yeah, and it flourishes especially if it's given to them or demonstrated to them.
Hmm. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Juliet now. And Juliet, do we have you? I guess we don't. Let's go to Katie. Katie, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, Matt.
Hi. What can we do for you?
I'm sorry?
Go on.
Oh, no, I just wanted to make a comment about what you said earlier regarding being a good listener and how in order to be a good listener, you have to be able to have listened to other people and other people have to be able to have listened to you. And regarding that, I feel like I'm a great listener, honestly, but I feel like I've been forced to be a great listener because whenever I speak, I'm constantly cut off. So, like, in conversations with a lot of people, different spheres of my life, there's never really room for me to speak because people find ways to just overshadow what I have to say with what they have to say. So, well, you know, in essence, I'm left just to listen.
Katie, at the risk of sounding like a therapist, and please forgive me for this, so when you get cut off, how does that make you feel? Oh, shoot me for that phrase.
No, it's fine. When I was younger, it was, well, all throughout it's been annoying. And throughout the course of my years, I've been trying to figure out ways to counter that and make sure I've been heard. And so it got to a point where I would continue to speak, and I'll just speak louder over this person, but for some reason, you know, it just still doesn't go through. And then I got tired of that because I don't like talking over other people. So I would just stop talking, and I let them finish their comment, and then I would try to speak again, and they would come with another comment. And I don't know, it's just gotten to the point where I don't really talk that much. So, like, sometimes I'm annoyed by it. Sometimes it's like, well, you know, this is how it is, so I'll just deal with it. And sometimes it's just like, you know, there has to be another way to, you know,
well,
engage with people.
And I am sure there is. Michael, I would raise a question. Katie, don't go away. Can we be a good listener, Michael, if we are listening to somebody while we are frustrated with them, PO'd, bored? You know, can we listen with all those big or little emotions coursing
through? Well, I think it's difficult, and Katie, I'm sympathetic. There are a lot of people do interrupt us and don't give us a chance to finish, and there's no magic solution for that, but I have a couple of suggestions to consider. They're not going to solve the whole problem.
I'll gladly take them.
Okay. If the relationship is an important one and the conversation is important, a useful trick is to invite the other person to speak first. For instance, if I have to talk over some problem with my wife, and it's really, I'm concerned about what I have to say, and I really just want her to hear me, the best thing for me to do is to approach her and to ask her ideas first, and to hear her out at some length and to acknowledge what she said. Then she's more likely to be receptive to me. Now, that doesn't work in everyday interactions. I'm not saying it does, but for important conversations, that's something to try. Another thing to try is if you listen to what the other person says sincerely, and you acknowledge it, and then it's your turn, and they interrupt, hold up your hand and say, just a second, can I finish? In other words, say something about what's going on in a nice way. And often, the sooner you say it, the less angry you'll be, and the easier it is for the other person to hear it. And finally, I would say that I have some people in my life who don't listen, don't give me my turn, and I don't have anything to do with those people.
True. Very logical.
And let me suggest something on the other side, too, something that you can do when it comes to listening, even to this annoying person, that we talked about curiosity. And if you can find a way to be curious about the person who's speaking, like you're hearing the words and you're experiencing being cut off or overpowered, but try to listen to the person underneath that. What is it about him or her? What's the internal experience like right now when they're talking? How are they feeling at this moment when they're talking? And if you can generate that kind of curiosity beyond the words, then perhaps you can ask curious questions that'll change the conversation and get it away from just words to something more meaningful and about the relationship between the two of you.
That's actually very true.
Okay?
Okay.
Just a thought.
Yeah.
So, good luck.
Thank you very much.
Speaking of listening, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, one of the great complaints about listening is about doctors cutting off patients every, I think it's 15 second. So when we come back, we're going to hear from Dr. Rita Sharon. She's a leader in the field of narrative medicine, professor of clinical medicine at Columbia University. But she's the director of something called Narrative Medicine, which is really interesting. And of course, we'll come back with Dr. Michael Nichols, who is my guest on today's show, professor of psychology at the College of William and Mary, and he's written The Lost Art of Listening, How Learning to Listen Can Improve Relationships. Our number is 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. That's right here on WHYY FM.
Many of the employees of private military contractors who were severely injured while helping fight the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan have been cheated out of their health insurance benefits or have had to fight for months or years to get them. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with investigative reporter T. Christian Miller of ProPublica. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Study shows that African Americans and Mexican Americans are less likely to be treated for depression than any other racial or ethnic group. We ask, why?
Partly it's access, partly it's fear, partly for mental health it's stigma.
A behind closed doors conversation about ethnicity and treatment for depression. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about The Lost Art of Listening, which is the title of the book my guest, Dr. Michael Nichols, has written. He's a professor of psychology at the College of William and Mary. And as promised, we are going to listen to a clip about listening and healing in medicine. Many healthcare professionals believe that a patient's story should not be drowned out by beeping and humming of high-tech instruments. They argue that an excellent listening skills are an important component in a healthcare professional's toolkit. More and more are believing that. So Dr. Rita Sharon has been a leader in the field of narrative medicine. Like I said before the break, she's a professor of clinical medicine at Columbia University and director of Columbia's program on narrative medicine. Our executive producer, Mike and Scott, asked her about the importance of listening in healthcare.
What happens as the central event of healthcare is a person who is suffering in some way gives an account of that suffering. And the person listening should know how to receive that account in all its detail, in all its implication, in all its unsaid.
At the same time, physicians and other healthcare professionals rely on instruments. They can take a look at things. They can listen to a heartbeat. So how do you balance the two things?
Yeah. Well, we listen so well to heartbeats, it's often to the detriment of listening to the words and the presence of the patient. They can learn from instruments that the ejection fraction is 25% in a failing heart, but they cannot learn unless they're skilled in receiving language and, of course, gesture and facial expression and silence and tears and all the rest of it. They cannot extract from that number the level of despair, the level of optimism, the level of resilience, the fact that Grandpa died of heart failure when he was 72.
What are the skills that medical professionals have to learn then? How should they listen?
I don't know if you've been to doctors recently, but if you had a symptom, chances are you were asked either to grade it on a scale of 1 to 10, or you were asked something like, is it sharp or dull? There are some medical schools that give medical students lists of adjectives because the medical students are so impoverished of adjectives. So maybe it's not just, is the pain sharp or dull, but is the pain sharp, dull, cramping, or fiery. So in part, it's a very primal training in how language works. But more than that, it's a primal training in how to be a receiver of complex stories that people tell us.
Now, let me ask you, can real listening be done in the time that's typically allotted in a doctor-patient visit?
Yeah. You know, when you look back in times of Hippocrates and Galen, they worried about we don't have enough time. They really did. And Osler, all of it. I mean, back to the, 4th century B.C. And we certainly have limited time. If anything, the limited time means that we have to be even better at the things that are difficult to do.
That was Dr. Rita Sharon. She's been a leader in the field of narrative medicine. And she spoke with our executive producer, Mike and Scott, about the importance of listening in healthcare. Michael, her language was pretty compelling. Receiving the words, receiving the story.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope my doctor was listening to that episode.
Yeah, me too. But that, one of the issues with not listening is a racing mind or emotions that we're not aware of or we are aware of. That interferes. But, doctors have racing minds. They're juggling hundreds of things at the same time.
A doctor has two agendas with the patient. One is to get information to make a diagnosis and prescribe a cure, but since the doctor is dealing with a real human being, the other agenda needs to be to listen, to understand, to be empathic, to give the patient a chance to complain and be heard. And the doctors that I value take a few extra seconds, and I think really that's all it is, to hear my anxiety, to acknowledge it, to let me talk a little bit more and not just concentrate on getting the symptoms and making the diagnosis.
I was recently hospitalized in a community hospital in South Jersey, and one of the nurses, when she was interviewing me, had her hand resting on my shoulder. And that made all the difference in the world to me. It made me feel that this was a person listening to a person.
That touch communicates caring and concern. But I think a good listener can also feel like someone is putting their arm around their shoulder.
Yeah.
The quality of being well listened to feels quite similar to that.
Yeah. I say often when I am in a dark hole, I want someone who loves me enough to come in there and just sit with me rather than telling me there's light on the other side. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Christina on the line. Christina?
Hi, Cole. I'm actually in education. I'm on leave right now. But one of the issues that I've always sort of struggled with sounds actually similar to what you were talking about with doctors, is that I really want to listen to my students who are teenagers, and they have a lot of things going on with them besides just their academic work, but there's so little time, and I do have an agenda. I do have lessons that I want to teach, and so I wondered if you had specific suggestions or general suggestions about good ways to listen when you're under that kind of time pressure, and you also have, you as a teacher have things that you need to accomplish as well.
Boy, am I glad we have a guest expert on that show. I wouldn't want to handle that question myself. Michael?
I think I hear my mother calling me. It's a tough question.
Yeah, and you never listen to her either.
There are situations when we don't have time to listen. Mm-hmm. If you have 60 minutes to deliver a 60-minute lecture, you have to decide you don't have time to listen then. But in my own teaching, I feel that I'm at my best when I can listen to the students and maybe set aside some of my agenda. Now, I'm not saying you should do that, and I'm certainly not saying you should do that all the time.
Right.
But if there are times to do that, to, you know, to cut back a little bit on, mm-hmm. on the lesson and invite the students to talk, then do so. But if you can't do that, you can't do that. I think for me it's very important not to think that one always has to be a good listener, you know, all day long. Try to be a good listener when you can.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as a teacher, if you can cut back a little bit on the lesson and just structure in a little time to let the students talk, that's useful. But I find that very difficult myself.
Right. Well, I think that's a good point, and I think it's one of the hardest things as a teacher is this idea of sort of letting go of some of the control in the classroom. And I know that students do learn more, actually, when they do have a chance to speak, but finding that balance is always tough. So I appreciate you taking my call.
Well,
thank you.
Wait, before you go?
Sure.
Do you feel better after you spoke with Michael?
I do. I mean, it's, you know, I think that one of the things that I heard from him was that, you know, absolutely there are times when it's possible and when it's not, and just, you know, I can be more conscious of when I'm planning about when I can find those times, that's important.
The reason I asked you this was because Michael didn't give you any answers at all, but he did hear you.
He did, yes.
Yeah, well, so that's probably why you felt better.
Absolutely.
You felt less alone. Hey, Michael, this stuff works, this listening stuff. Thank you very much. Thanks for your call. Let's stick with the phones. We've got lots of people who want to talk about this listening business, Michael. We've got Debbie on the line. Debbie?
Hello. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for taking my call. I've learned a lot from your program over the years.
Oh, thank you. Me too.
I have an angry, troubled teenager who doesn't like to communicate, and I'm wondering how I can kind of get into her, with you knowing that and your guest, using listening or other skills associated with listening.
It's a great question.
She's 16.
It's a great question. Michael, are there ways of listening that encourage talking?
Yeah. But with a 16-year-old, a lot of what's going on is about the history of the relationship. I'm not saying that anybody did anything wrong, but the 16-year-old already has a lot of expectations about being listened to or not. One of the tricks of listening to an angry or unresponsive person is we want them to say something other than what they're saying. If someone shows anger, shows a reticence to talk, listening means hearing that and acknowledging it. Mm-hmm. You know, I could see how pissed off you are. I could see you don't want to talk right now. Seems like maybe you want to be left alone. If you work very hard at listening in that way, in other words, accepting where the angry 16-year-old is coming from, gradually he or she is more likely to trust that you will hear him or her, and gradually, maybe, open up more in the ways that you hope for. But often there's a disjunctive quality of the interaction. I'm not judging your interaction because I don't know anything about it, but the parent who wants to talk to the teenager is angry, and the parent says, oh, come on, talk, or what's going on, or I want to hear more about what's going on. And what the teenager is saying is, I'm beat, leave me alone. If you want to be a good listener, you want to develop a good understanding relationship, hear that and acknowledge it and let that be.
I want to add something else on to that, Debbie and mm-hmm. Michael, that often many parents of teenagers, we ask our teenagers to open up, but they have no role models. They don't know what that means because we've never done it as parents, and I strongly encourage parents to open up. So when you sit with her, if she doesn't want to talk, if you can honestly open your heart and talk about maybe your fear, your helplessness, not just your frustration with her. That's easy. But go deeper. Tell her what it's like, you know, what it's like for you to be a mother to her, to be in this family, what it means to you to be who you are. Teach her how to open up and, you know, trust her with what goes on inside of you, and maybe she'll start to trust you with what goes on inside of her. Just a thought.
Well, I think that's, thank you very much, both of you, because you're asking me to look at it more in the long term, and I think that's excellent.
Good. All right. Well, thanks for your call.
All right. Take care now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
One of your chapters in your book is about listening between intimate partners. Of course, this is the big deal here. It's harder to listen to a loved one than a stranger, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, because there's so much at stake. You know, if I'm thinking about doing something that might not be a good idea, if I told you about it, you wouldn't have any stake in the matter, and you'd be able to hear me out and, you know, let me play with my thoughts. If I tell my wife I'm thinking about selling the house, she may not be a very good listener to that conversation.
Right, right. And what if our loved one is saying something we really don't want to hear? How can we stay tuned in, and what happens when we don't?
Well, it's tough. You know, the formula is simple, and that is to listen, to hear the person, and acknowledge them as an act that's separate from agreeing with them. But we're so afraid in relationships that we have a lot at stake in that understanding what's being said means agreeing with it. You have to remember that that's different. And if we don't listen and understand, we're so afraid and defensive that we just argue and say, no, that's not the case.
Right.
And the issue never goes away.
Right, right. Let's see if we can get one more phone call in. We've got Peter on the line.
Hello.
Hi, Peter.
Hello, Dr. Dan, and thank you for all your great words of wisdom all through the years I've listened to you. George Sheehan, a running doctor who has passed away a while ago, he always used to say that you can't think and listen at the same time.
That's beautifully put, yeah.
And I always try and tell some folks that, maybe my wife, some of the kids and stuff, but I wanted you and the professor to have a comment on that.
I've got a question. How can you not think?
What you cannot do is not rehearse what you're thinking about, not rehearse what you want to say. You can let go of your thoughts and agenda and just concentrate on hearing the other person and trying to understand them. So
right.
In that sense, I think Dr. Sheehan was saying is beautiful.
Yeah, Peter, I agree. And that is the issue with not hearing, when we've got our own racing minds and our own agendas, and we feel we don't have enough time to just be quiet and listen. Yeah, we can't really listen to the person.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks for your call, and thanks for bringing up that quote. It's a wonderful quote.
Thank you all very much. It's great.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
You know, I want to see if we can get in one more question about intimate relationships. How can you, if you're in an interaction, you, the listener, tell if you're not listening to someone? Can you, in the middle of a discussion?
No, and in, you know, in my own life, I often fail to be a good listener in intimate relationships. But something that I've learned over the years is that if you do a poor job of listening in a conversation, it's not the end of it. You can go back and fix it later. If you leave a conversation and you realize the other person is angry or upset, and probably doesn't feel understood, you don't have to kick yourself and say, oh, I'm a failure. You can return maybe later and say, you know, we were talking about such and such, and I'm not sure that I fully understood what you're saying, and I'd like to, and then listen. So it's like you don't have to be perfect. You can go back and atone for your poor listening. And that makes a lot makes it a lot easier for me not to worry about being perfect all the time.
Hmm. It's also tough to listen if the person who's talking is hurling epithets at you and calling you various body parts. It's tough to listen.
Absolutely.
So what happens there?
Well, what happens there is that you get defensive and you block your ears and you either run away or feel like it. If you can, like, teach yourself in those interactions to listen, just to hear the other person's feelings and to try to hear them making some kind of request of you. They may be saying that you are, you know, this and that bad thing, and that's hard to listen to, but behind that, they're asking for something.
Yeah.
And that's less hard to listen to.
That's true. It is much less hard to listen to, and the other factor is, you know, if you're being hurt while someone's talking, simply say, you know, that hurts. That's hurting me. Please don't hurt me. Michael, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I think it's been an interesting and informative show. It's an important topic that we need to return to. My guest has been Dr. Michael Nichols. He's a professor of psychology at William & Mary in Virginia. He's written The Lost Art of Listening, How Learning to Listen Can Improve Your Relationships. Next week on Voices in the Family, we've got a very special show. We'll be doing a show inspired by the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We'll be talking about tolerance and equality. Well, if you've got a question or comment, you can email us at voices@whyy.org, and you can reach me at drdangottlieb.com. Well, the engineer for today's show has been John Knapp. Elizabeth Perez Luna is the executive producer of audio content at WHYY. Mike and Scott is the executive producer of Voices in the Family. Gita Simons and Stephanie Marudis are our producers. Our intern is Jonathan Glick. I'm Dan Gottlieb. Enjoy your week, my friends.
You're listening to W.